This is Molly Hemingway, encouraging you to listen to my favorite podcast, Issues, Etc. Every day you get in-depth interviews with host Todd Wilkin asking expert guests substantive, thought-provoking questions on all of the important news and issues of our day. The expert guests are in culture, law, ethics, philosophy, theology, and apologetics. Expert guests, expansive topics, always extolling Christ. Issues, etc.
We have more evidence than we need. It is abundant, super abundant, that fathers are necessary. Without fathers, not only do lives turn out less than they could be, but society at large is harmed, and not just over the short term, over the long term. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about the necessity of fathers. Delano Squires joins us. He's a research fellow for the DeVos Center for Life, Religion, and Family at the Heritage Foundation. He holds a Master's of Public Policy degree from George Washington University, and he's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, We Need Committed Dads to Quiet Our Cultural Chaos. Delano, welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Describe, if you would, what you call the social engineering of the last half century surrounding fathers.
Sure. When I think back over that time period, I think about the ways in which government policy has been used, I would say, to undermine families. So, for instance, thinking about the 1960s and reforms to welfare that incentivized single parenthood. So there were policies like that basically gave the message that a check from the federal government was sufficient to replace a father in the home. So part of it is public policy and law. Part of it, I would say, has been changes to culture. So, for instance, even something as simple as how dads were depicted in earlier generations, right? The father was a source of wisdom and sort of moral clarity and guidance. And then as you roll forward into the 80s, 90s, and certainly into the 2000s, the dads were kind of bumbling and fumbling, and in some respects, and in some shows, depicted as basically the eldest son of a do-it-all matriarch. So I think there are a number of ways in which we receive the messages loud and clear that fathers, while good to have in the home, were somewhat like the family's appendix. Helpful if you have one, but not particularly necessary.
How has the media championed that message that fathers just, in the end, don't matter?
So, again, I think part of it is in the depictions. Part of it is in the coverage of certain sort of social phenomena. So the idea that I've seen, for instance, the New York Times run stories that basically say, well, the nuclear family, the two-parent married household, is not particularly important. And it's as long as kids have access to different resources and fully funded schools and so on and so on and so forth, those are the things that really matter, right? And that two parents in a home married to one another, committed to one another, and their children aren't necessary for children to thrive. So I think both in terms of entertainment and the way certain stories are framed, they've given the impression that fathers don't matter. And particularly in recent years, part of the reason, part of what I would say the media has done is send the message fathers don't matter by sending a larger message that biological sex is not real. So I remember in 2018, CNN ran a story about a so-called transgender couple. So it was a biological male who thought he was a woman, who identified as a woman, and a biological female who identified as a man, who put aside whatever gender dysphoria they may have had to conceive a baby naturally. And then when the baby was born, they fulfilled their biological duties, and then they went back to the gender roles, quote-unquote, that they were living under. And by the time it got to the end of the piece, the quote-unquote dad, which is really a woman, was saying that she wants her son to see her as a real man. So she described using the restroom in front of him with a prosthetic device. That story ran on Father's Day on CNN in 2018. And in fact, it was the lead story on Father's Day weekend for CNN.com on 2018. And I remember that clearly. So it's both media in terms of film and television, in addition to news and journalism and how stories are framed.
What social ills has the absence of fathers brought?
I would say a number of social ills. I mean, fatherlessness is connected to or correlated with elevated levels of juvenile delinquency, with teen pregnancy, lower education outcomes for students. They're all different types of, and obviously, you know, the economic impact to mothers raising children, particularly when a father's income is not present in the home. So there are those impacts, and then I think there's a less tangible impact, like the modeling effects that are lost when a child does not grow up seeing a father in his or her home. So a son loses a pattern in terms of how he should behave, a model, and then or a mentor, and then a daughter loses a model of what she should look for in a man. So there's a number of different social ills that occur when dads are not in the home.
How has fatherhood changed?
It's changed in a number of areas. Some are good, I would certainly argue. So, for instance, I would argue, and I think the data backs this up, that fathers today are more involved in the day-to-day rearing, particularly on social and emotional levels, of their children. I would surmise that I changed more diapers with my first three children than my granddad did with all 10 of his kids. So there's certain changes like that, and then there are other changes to fatherhood based on the changing dynamics between men and women. So more fathers live apart from their children than in previous generations. There's the advent of stay-at-home dads. And then, you know, there are fathers who are managing children by multiple mothers, and that itself brings with it certain challenges at times.
How have fatherhood and being a husband become disconnected?
I think, again, with some of the changes to our social norms, so for instance, since the 1960s, the non-marital birth rate has increased for basically every group, and the only group that is below what I refer to as the Moynihan threshold, which is 25% non-marital birth rate, and I coined that phrase just because that was the non-marital birth rate in the Black community at the time that Daniel Patrick Moynihan authored the Moynihan Report. The only group that is below that threshold is the Asian American community. So when marriage is not seen as necessary for the rearing of children, then inevitably fatherhood and husbandhood become disconnected.
How has this disconnect disproportionately affected the Black community?
We've seen this trend now for almost 60 years. In 1965, the non-marital birth rate in the Black community was 25%. By the mid-80s, it crossed over 50%, and it has been steadily at or around 70%, at least for the last 20 years. So in addition to the non-marital birth rate increasing, what happens when marriage and family are disconnected is that the rate of multi-partner fertility has increased. So you're talking about a father who may have three children by two different women, and one of those mothers that he has a child with herself, she may have three children by two different men. So all of these things sort of complicate family life, again, across the board, but particularly within the Black community.
How is this disconnect reflected in the Democratic Party platform?
So one of the things I talk about in my most recent piece, you know, co-author with Heritage President Dr. Roberts, is the fact that, you know, again, I talk about some of these changes in terms of policy and culture, but Democrats, basically since President Obama, have abandoned the notion that marriage and family are or should be discussed publicly with respect to improving social outcomes. So he talked about it often during his presidency, you know, his 8 years in office. But since 2016, in their 2016 and 2020 platforms, the party removed all references to fatherhood, and the only reference to marriage in the 2020 platform was regarding forced marriages in foreign countries. So while many people like to uphold the Obama's relationship on a personal level, the left does not look at family formation, marriage, and natural family as something to be discussed with respect to policy, to public policy.
Why should children growing up in intact families be the foundation of all conservative social policy?
Well, I think the reason is quite simple. I would argue that the greatest privilege in this country today is to be a child who grows up in a home with married biological parents, a married mom and dad, in a loving and low-conflict household. I think decades of data suggest that is the ideal scenario in which to raise a child. So to the extent that that is true, I think social conservatives or conservatives should orient social policy towards achieving that particular goal. That doesn't mean that that is going to be the outcome for every family, but I think we should at least be clear about what our ideals are.
What do you mean by putting marriage before carriage?
Well, I'm talking about getting back to the way things used to be. Sometimes I'll jokingly sing the schoolyard rhyme that most people are familiar with, about a boy and a girl sitting in a tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G, first comes love, then comes marriage, then comes baby in a baby carriage. So even at a young age, children understand that forming a family has a particular order or should have a particular order. In recent decades, we have disrupted that order, and now what you have is certainly more so than 50, 60 years ago, what you have are people who intentionally go into relationships. They may be cohabiting or be dating and decide to have a baby without the benefit of marriage. And I think we need to reverse that, both on the lower economic side of the income spectrum, as well as among college degree and upwardly mobile middle class Americans.
Finally, how can fathers be, as you say, the first and last lines of defense against leftist influences?
Well, I think dads need to understand, for lack of a better term, what time it is. I think fathers need to understand the threats to their homes, to their households, to their children. So this could take the form of many different ways. One, dads being more active and cultivating good relationships with their children, open lines of communication, playing with their kids. But to the extent, you know, kids watch TV and watch movies, to take in a more active hand in vetting some of that content to make sure that the children are not taking in images or words or themes that run counter to your values. And then it can also be, I would love to see more men at the school board meetings and not just leave the front lines of this battle to the moms, to the women. So I think it's incumbent on fathers to protect and provide for their homes. And in that way, they can be and should be the first and last lines of defense against any influence that seeks to do their family harm.
Delano Squires is a research fellow for the DeVos Center for Life, Religion, and Family at the Heritage Foundation. He holds a Master of Public Policy degree from George Washington University, and he's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, "We Need Committed Dads to Quiet Our Cultural Chaos." You'll find a link to it and to the Heritage Foundation at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Delano, thanks.
Thank you.
This weekend, be sure to check out Kelly Clegus's Luther Rose Earrings and Prayer Beads at adcrucem.com, adcrucem.com. Next week on Issues Etc., we'll discuss PETA's version of the creation story with Dr. Tom Egger. We'll have Pastors Brian Wolfmiller and Brian Ketchelmeyer respond to your unanswered Bible questions, and we'll talk with Dr. Nancy Piercy about the toxic war on masculinity. I'm Todd Wilkin. Go to church on Sunday. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.
This is Pastor Tyler Arnold of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The Saints at Village are proud to be an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. If you are in the St. Louis area, join us for the Divine Service at 8:15 or 10:45 a.m., Bible study and Sunday school at 9:30 a.m., as we receive Christ's promise of salvation and forgiveness through word and sacrament. You can find us at villagelutheranchurch.org. Village Lutheran in St. Louis welcomes you.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.